Chapter 19. Chris's plane landed in San Diego at 7 in the morning, West Coast time. Lonnie and Harry were waiting for him at the terminal. They looked uneasy. Chris knew that neither of them liked airports very much, but that had to do more with nerves that were connected with their early days of carrying pot and flight bags. "Where's Peter?" said Chris. "Let's talk in the car," said Lonnie, after she kissed Chris hello. "Did you have a good flight?" said Harry. "I slept most of the time," said Chris. Harry looked a lot like Peter, the same lanky, hard build, the same streaky blonde hair, and the same nervous energy. He drove the Mercedes that was parked on the incoming flight's ramp and had gotten a ticket for being there too long. "You know, it's worth the $25 not to have to hike all the way out to the lots that they have around here," said Harry, as he crumpled a ticket into the glove compartment. "Is Peter at the ranch or the beach house?" said Chris happily. The warm sun and the expectation of California were raising his spirits quickly. Lonnie took hold of his hand. "Chris, there's something we need to talk about before we get to the house." "What's happening?" "Peter isn't here anymore."
"What do you mean?"
"He overdosed, Chris," said Lonnie.
"How is he? I mean, he isn't..."
"He's dead, Chris," said Harry. "We cremated him on Thursday. The coroner fucked us around with an autopsy and everything, Chris. He's dead.
Nobody really knows how it happened," said Lonnie. "We found him out at the ranch."
"He's dead?"
"We wanted to tell you, Chris, but we couldn't. You know how it is."
Tears rolled out of Chris's eyes, and he brought his hand up to his mouth. His mind instantly produced an image of Peter. They were 17, and he was showing Chris how to siphon out of a tank of gasoline for his car. Chris heard him say, "The taste of that first mouthful is awful, but it gets you around. Chris, we need to see you and talk about what we're going to do now," said Harry. Chris didn't answer. He searched for Lonnie's eyes and found them.
"He's really gone?"
"It was how he lived, Chris. He always said that he didn't care if he ever saw 35. And he was right."
"Oh, shit," said Chris.
Then the car was quiet until they reached the beach house. Chris stared at their faces as they got out of the car. It frightened him that he didn't see any emotion. He reached for Harry's arm, and the blonde hair swung around and faced him. There was a desperate expression in his eyes.
"I'm really sorry, Harry."
"Me too. He was all I had. But we live a risky life, Chris. All of us. Now that it's like this, you just gotta move on and get on to the next thing so that the last one doesn't swallow you up."
"Oh, man," said Chris. "I don't think I can stay here."
"Chris, you're always welcome with us," said Lonnie. "Everybody knew how Peter felt about you. You were as much like his brother as Harry." Chris felt himself losing control and said that he just wanted to walk for a minute. Under his breath, he muttered, "Peter, you stupid fuck." He picked up a stone, threw it as far as he could, into the hills. Then another, and another. Lonnie and Harry stood watching him.
"Do you think there's going to be any shit about the money?" said Harry. Lonnie answered in an exasperated tone. He hasn't even begun to think about how we got him out here, much less why he came. She walked over to Chris and stood next to him for a while. He continued to fire the stones, wildly, through his tears. When he was exhausted, she said, "Do you want to come into the house?" Chris turned around slowly, reached into his pocket. He produced an enormous roll of $100 bills wrapped in rubber bands. "Here's the money, all of it. That's what you guys were worried about, wasn't it?" "It wasn't my idea to do things like this, Chris. Clue and Harry thought it would be better to wait until you got here." "We talk," said Chris. "And you joke with me about what he was doing. You were his chick. He cared about you. He made the difference in my life. But he isn't here anymore. And I am. I've got to deal with that. And so do you." "Right," said Chris. "You think badly of me, don't you, Chris?" "I'm not thinking at all. Give me a little time." "There's a room all ready for you," said Lonnie. She put her arm around Chris and led him into the house. "Who's Clue?" "He was Peter's partner. They got together about 6 months ago and branched out into cocaine and opium. A lot of people are smoking opium out here now." "Right," said Chris. "Look, I'm going to make sure that everybody leaves you alone for a while you get your head together, and then we can talk." "I need a little bit of time," said Chris. When he got to the room, he found a telephone beside the bed and called Rahway. Ron answered the phone. "I'm coming back tomorrow," said Chris. "There's some trouble out here." "What do you need?" said Ron. "I need you to be around," said Chris. "You guys sounded great last night," said Ron. Chris had forgotten about last night and Pistol Pete's. He ran his hand across a patchwork quilt that covered the king-size bed and said, "Yeah, far out. It was great." Then he hung up. Ron sat holding the phone and grimaced. Chris never said that he needed anything from anyone. Just wasn't his way. Part of the confidence that people had in him was the way he was able to see through every situation and not become alarmed or needy. It was that spirit that he infused into Rahway, the place where anything was possible. But Ron heard fear in his voice. He thought about calling Warren and sharing it with him. Then he frowned deeply and furrowed his eyebrows. Warren had really fucked the place up. He couldn't call him and tell him what he felt because Warren couldn't be trusted not to use it on Chris or on Ron to make some point later on. He wasn't a part of them anymore. And now might be one of the times he was actually needed. Ron lit a cigarette and sat over the pad. He wanted to capture in an instant the spirit of the place. It seemed all screwed up now, but that wasn't the way that it started. It started out being something new and filled with possibilities, just like he and Robin. The possibilities for both were dwindling quickly. When we've burned our senses away for being too much of us, what will we want to feel? When we've learned that we've learned the illusions of color, what shall we wish to see? Chris lay back on the bed and closed his eyes. Peter couldn't be dead. He was going to burst into the room any time now, laughing at the look on Chris's face and telling him about what he'd planned to do with them for the next few days. This was so sick, it couldn't be true. When Chris felt himself starting to drift off, he opened his eyes. He didn't want to sleep here. He'd done what they wanted him to do. He brought the money out, and now he wanted to get out of here as soon as he could. His mind brought Peter's face back into his eyes. "Life's crazy, man," said Peter. "And if you're crazier than the next fucker, you'll get over, and he'll get lost in the shuffle." In his mind, he studied the face. It didn't make sense. No matter what he did, Peter was always on top of things and had them under control. Then a thought hit him. Peter had everything under control except himself. He didn't hear her come into the room at first. He must have fallen asleep. Lonnie took off her clothes and lay down next to him on the bed. Her long hair was hanging loose. Chris had taken off his clothes and had been under the sheet. He felt her when she spooned against him, was startled by her presence. "I haven't let anyone touch me since I heard he was dead. I need to be held too, Chris. I can't let these guys see that I'm hurting and that I'm vulnerable right now. I'm afraid they'll chew me up." She was whispering in his ear and stroking his shoulders, lifting his hair gently and replacing it. "Please make love to me, Chris. Help me say goodbye." She began to rub her crotch against him. Chris hadn't moved or said anything. She tucked her head back under the sheet. He turned over on his back, took his cock into her mouth and began to suck it with a regular sliding motion. Peter had always told him that Lonnie gave the best head of any chick that he'd ever been with. Her mouth moved as if its muscles were oiled and dancing on his cock. He felt that his organ had been placed in a wet silk machine that applied gently squeezing pressure in his most sensitive areas. He moaned, she pumped harder, he was very hard. When she came from under the sheet, she was smiling. She loved making men hard like this. They were so easy to control when they were like this. She lay on her back next to him, reached down, grabbed her ankles. She spread herself and pulled her legs back into the air. "This is yours right now, Chris. Come, do me good." He felt himself throbbing. He needed her. He needed to fuck her hard. He threw himself into her and pumped her furiously. She humped back without letting go of her ankles. She grunted harshly as he went in and out of her. Then she screamed. The scream seemed to grab his cock in a new way. Then he heard it. He felt his own orgasm shooting up his shaft. It felt so good. She held him in her arms, put her finger up to her lips in a quieting gesture. "It's like it never happened," she said. And then she left. Chris got up and went to take a shower, scrubbed himself clean and changed his clothes. Then he walked downstairs to the redwood cabin, looked around, his eyes fixed on the huge fireplace, the Ponderosa look, Peter had called it. Lonnie and Harry were sitting on the couch, smoking a joint with Clue, a big guy with scraggly shoulder-length hair, a scar under his chin, and a chipped-tooth smile. "It's good to see you, Chris," said Clue. "I'm really sorry that we have to end up meeting under these circumstances. Lonnie and Harry have told me that you want to go back home. But we need to talk for a little bit first." Chris shook his hand and sat down. "This is some of the best weed that you'll ever smoke." He offered it to Chris. "I'll pass," said Chris. Clue produced a bag and dropped it in front of Chris. "This is yours. Peter would want you to have it, you know." "Thanks." "I wish you'd change your mind about leaving so quickly," said Lonnie. "It feels good to have you here." "I think that I'd like to go back," said Chris. "Whatever you need to do, man," said Harry, as he sucked on the joint and held the smoke in his lungs as he produced a giant exhale. "This business arrangement has been good to everybody," said Clue. "There might be some problem with fronting you all of the shipment, but I'm pretty sure we can work it out." Clue gave him a nod and a snaggletooth grin that made Chris uneasy. "I'd like to think about it. I'll call you after I get back to Jersey," Lonnie said. "We have Peter's ashes in this urn. Would you like to see it?" Chris shrugged. Lonnie got up to get the urn. "She's a great old lady. She took care of Peter through a lot of shit, Chris. She's grieving for him on the inside, just the way all of us are." "I wish someone would have told me," said Chris. "Yeah," said Clue. "I don't know how it happened the way it did." Chris looked at Harry, got up and said that he had some stuff to do out back. "I don't want to upset anyone by going over this, but who found Peter?" "Harry," said Clue. "He went fucking nuts, banging on the walls and screaming, 'Fuck you, God,' and everything. We didn't know if he was going to be able to keep it together." Lonnie came back into the room with the urn and set it on an unfinished wood table in front of Chris. He stared at it and the thought that it looked like something that somebody was going to store oil in. He picked it up and held it in his hands, but there was no special feeling that he experienced. He thought that Peter would have been happier with a headstone in the grave, but decided not to say anything. Clue said, "Life's too fucking short." Chris felt like saying amen, but just put the urn back on the table.